ॐ हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ ॐ गणानां त्वा गणपतिगं भवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमम् ज्येष्ठराधरायणम् सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ॐ हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ You have heard me many times saying the class from the beginning. The first two mantras present the teaching, the Jnana Yogaha and Karma Yogaha in a nutshell. Then the third mantra onwards till the eighth mantra, Upanishad presents the same Jnana Yogaha discussed in the first mantra, little more elaborately. And we have already seen the third mantra here. The third mantra, applying the Nahi Ninda Nyayaha, glorifies Jnana Yoga, glorifies the knowledge, Jnanam itself, but directly, indirectly glorifies Jnanam by condemning ignorance through the condemnation of the ignorant people. Wherein we saw the Ajnaninaha, the ignorant people are said to be the destroyers of the very self. Even though self is ever indestructible, nityaha atma, but still not knowing the self, what the self is in fact ignoring and neglecting the self. This neglecting the self, ignoring the self, but not knowing what the self is as good as having the self dead, which means the unknown thing does not serve any purpose. The unknown thing is anything in the world, any unknown thing is as good as non-existent. So unknown self also is as good as non-existent. Therefore, those who continue to remain ignorant without making effort to know the self are ignorant people. For them, self is dead. Therefore, he says, in fact, in Taittiriya Upanishad also it is said, the one who says this, the self, the truth is not there, he is actually, for him the very self is not there. Therefore, they are said to be Atmahanaha. And what happens to that Atmahanaha? You have to remember that the Atmaha, the singular word, Atmahano, and Atmahanaha, those people, those who kill the self, the killers of the self, such people continue to remain in samsara, going through repeatedly samsara, assuming, taking different births, rebirths, one after the other, and assuming different bodies. And in each birth also what? They'll continue to remain ignorant. Irrespective of which birth they take, in keeping with the punyam, they may take Deva Shariram, a celestial body. In keeping with the punyam and papam, they may have Manusha Shariram. in keeping with the only papam they may have, even the other body of any or inferior orders, whichever body they take, even in highest form of body also, they'll continue to be ignorant, because even any celestial being also is what? Ignorant only. So they'll continue to be ignorant in all the janmas, irrespective of which janma they take to. In all the births, which body they assume, they continue to be ignorant. And that is why in that context I also said, so all these people who continue to be ignorant, assuming any body, in any birth, taking whatever type of birth they take also, they are said to be asuraha. And the bodies are, they take to the bodies which are bodies of the asuras. Which means, even the devaha, assuming a deva shariram, being born celestial also, because of the punyam, still he is what? Asuraha only. But then who is suraha then? And I told in the last class, the suraha is the one who revels in the vision of one's own self being Paramatma. Sushtu Atmani Ramate Yaha Sahayeva Suraha. Which means a jnani, a wise person, alone is a suraha. Other than jnani, any being of any superior order, whether a celestial, a devaha, a manushyaha, or any being, is only asuraha, according to this verse. Therefore, they will be given to that, they will remain in samsara. That also we saw in the last class. Now, then we just started the fourth mantra. Therefore, and I also said, the glorification of jnanam is for us to become inclined, interested, thereby to become committed to the pursuit of knowledge and to attain knowledge and enjoy the benefit of knowledge. So now we'll go to the fourth mantra. Let us read that now. We have to read. Let us read from the third mantra, because from the third mantra is all jnana yoga associated mantras. Asuryanamate lokaha,
Asuryanamate lokaha,
Andhena tamasavritaha,
Andhena tamasavritaha,
Tan te pretyabhigacchanti,
pretyabhigacchanti,
Yeke
Chatmano
janaha,
Chatmano
janaha, that tagamste, I split it as tan te. Okay? Tagum means nothing but tan. It's a Vedic usage. Anyway, this will already explain. We'll go to the next mantra now. Here, Atma Swarupam, truth of the inner essence of every being, or the truth of the whole, the reality, the nature of the reality, Param Brahma, Paramatma, obtaining as the innermost essence of every being, that nature of the Atma is discussed in this verses, in this first verse. And as I told you earlier, the nature of the Atma, the four aspects of the nature of the Atma, are presented here. I'm sure you remember all of them. So let us read the first. Anejat
Yekam
Manasojaviyo
Manasojaviyo
Manasojaviyaha
Manasojaviyaha
Na enat
Nainat
Devaha apnuvan
Devaha apnuvan
Purvam arshat
पूर्वं पश्यते
तद् धावतः अन्यान् अत्येति तिष्ठत् तद् धावतः अन्यान् धावतोऽन्यान् अत्येति तिष्ठत् तस्मिन् अपः तस्मिन्नपो मातरिष्वा दधाति. We have already seen the most of the meaning of this mantra, but still I want to start from here. So one of the four aspects discussed, aspects of the nature of the Atma discussed, the final aspect I said was the Atmanaha Rupadvayam, or twofold forms of the Atma, which means Atma is one, Atma is secondless, Atma is non-dual, Atma Yekaha, Atma Advayaha, Atma Advitiyaha. That is clear, but still twofold forms of the Atma means Atma does not have two real forms. Here, how should understand? Atma, if with Upadhi, is Sopadhikaha Atma. Atma without Upadhi is Nirupadhikaha Atma. Which means we need not remove the Upadhis physically here. Without removing the Upadhis physically, you know, and then cognitively deleting the Upadhis, we can see the Atma as the Nirupadhika, Upadhi Rahita Atma without the Upadhis. So seeing Atma from two different angles, as Sopadhikaha Atma and as Nirupadhikaha Atma. So again here the doubt, what does the word Upadhihi means? Upadhihi, see Upa, Upa means Samipe, near. Adhihi, Adhihi means. So that which falsely transfers its attributes is Adhihi. So Samipe Sthitva Sviyan Dharman Adhatte, Samipe Sthitva Sviyan Dharman Adhatte Samipasthani Vastuni Iti Upadhihi. Samipe Sthitva Sviyan Dharman Upa Samipe Sthitva Sviyan Dharman Adhatte Iti Upadhihi. So that which transfers, throws upon its own attributes, not really but falsely, upon something which is very close, nearer. If something is very far, it cannot throw its attributes to it. Something is very close. Traditional example is what? Traditionally, the example given is a crystal and a japa kusumam. Japa kusumam means a hibiscus. A hibiscus means, we are nowadays don't talk about varieties of hibiscus. You know, those days we had only the single petaled red hibiscus. It's called japa kusumam. So the japa kusumam is there. And the color, if japa kusumam is placed near the crystal container or placed inside the crystal container also, and the color of the redness of the flower, you know, the japa kusumam, the hibiscus flower, the red hibiscus flower becomes the upadhi for the crystal. Upadhihi. Why do you call it upadhihi? Because the crystal being placed very close to the, in fact inseparably, you can say how the container happens to be the red, the crystal, crystal clear container. The japa kusumam, the red hibiscus placed there in the container, contained in the crystal container, you know, throws its attributes. The redness, the color of the flower, you know, is falsely transferred to the crystal container. The crystal, you know, looks red in color. So the redness, but when we see the crystal, this crystal does not look crystal clear. It becomes red in color. It looks red. So does the crystal really look red? It looks red. Has it really become red? No. But it looks red. It looks, the redness of the hibiscus has been transferred to, not really, falsely transferred to the crystal, which means, so this what, now why do, the japa kusumam is said to be the upadhi here, because its color has been falsely transferred to, given to, thrown upon this crystal. But really it has not become red. But still it looks red, as though the redness has been given, transferred. Similarly here also, upadhihi, our physical body is upadhihi for the atma. Sense organs are the upadhis. Organs of actions are the upadhis. Pranas are the upadhis. Mind is upadhi. Intellect is upadhi. You know, all these are subtle and gross objects. Karya karana sanghataha. The entire body, mind, sense complex becomes an upadhi for the atma. So we can say nama rupam karma. The name, form, and also function. All these three. Nama, rupam, karma. Name, form and function, the purpose also you can say. So all of them belong to this upadhis only. Form belongs to upadhi. Name belongs to upadhi. Karma, the function also belongs to upadhi. Action belongs to upadhi. Purpose also belongs to upadhi. Nothing belongs to the atma here. But what happens? The form, name, function, in all the attributes, body's attributes, mind's attributes, sense organs, nature of the sense organs, the pranas, all the attributes of all these, you know, all of them, all these body-mind complex become superimposed upon the atma. Falsely transferred to Atma because of close proximity. But you need not remove them, remove the upadhis. Without even removing the upadhis physically, but cognitively you can understand that how Atma is free from the attributes. Like what? We need not remove the hibiscus from the crystal. We not take it away from the crystal container. We need not try to undo the color of the hibiscus. We need not even remove this crystal container separately. We need not even make the effort to rub the, again, against which is a very lot of waste of time, isn't it? We not try to rub and remove the redness on the crystal container also. Without any effort, you can only intellectually, we can see the fact that the color belongs to the hibiscus, redness belongs to the hibiscus, not to the crystal. Spatikasya natu raktavarnaha, raktavarnasya raktavarnaha japa kusumasyeva. This is the understanding. Similarly here also, all different attributes, all these the attributes, dharmas, belong to the upadhis only. Mana upadhihi, no, mana upadhihi, indri upadhihi, prana upadhihi, nal deha upadhihi. All these, the atma is free from the upadhis. It's called seeing the atma, what now? Being free from upadhis and the upadhi dharmas. If we see otherwise, you know, if you see the atma with the upadhi also, then you can understand what? Upadhi by itself happens to be, upadhi by itself happens to be an inert material product. It is incapable of functioning and acting. Isn't it? Upadhi by itself is inert material product, is incapable of functioning and acting. But Atma is, Atma does not do any action. So here we take only one small thing, actionlessness and activity. Actionless Atma, if you see the Atma as Nirupadika Atma, Atma if you see, no, intellectually negating the upadhis as non-self, if you see Atma alone as Atma, as the pure consciousness, Atma is of the nature of actionlessness. Atma is of the nature of motionlessness, silence. Isn't it? Therefore, here Upanishad presents, Nirupadika Drishtya Atma is Anejamanaha. Atma is of the nature of Nirupadika Drishtya. Okay, without the upadhis, if you see Atma, what is the nature, real nature of Atma? Atma is of the nature of motionlessness, actionlessness, silence, not a changelessness. Which means sva avastha aprachyutihi is called what? Motionlessness, no? Not undergoing any change. Yesterday also I mentioned this in my class, other class. No, chutihi, chutihi means, I don't need to talk about it here, it comes in Shankara's, Ashankara Bhagavatpada's commentary. Chutihi means moving away from its original nature. If anything moves away from its original nature, it's called chutihi, chutihi, moving away. It will become different, undergoing a change. And it's called chutihi. So chuta means what? No, gone, undergone a change. It's chuta. Slips away from its real nature, how it is. Slipping away. So achyuta also means what? Bhagavan is called achyutaha, one who does not stray away from his real swarupam. One meaning. Another meaning is one who cannot be missed is also called what? Achyuta. So here anejamanaha means what here? Anejamanaha means, no, there is no prachyutihi at all. There is not even a slightest of the straying away from its swarupam. It's called retaining its swarupam always as it is. So anejamanaha, because why I say anejamanaha means it's a present participle. Anejamanaha is a present participle, and it is that the root is what means not moving. Atma is of the nature of non-movement. Anejamanaha, non-moving, unmoving. So the ejru dhatuhu, it's an atmanepadi dhatuhu, therefore the form must be ejamanaha only. But we do not question why it has come here. In chandasa, here anejati is a chandasa prayogaha, the Vedic usage. I told you last class also, I'm repeating it today. The atmanepadi dhatuhu always takes Shanach pratyayaha, Shanach affix. and then Parasripadi Dhatu should take Shatru Antaha, Shatru Pratyaha. So here, how can an Atmanepadi Dhatu take Shatru Pratyaha, Shatru, no, Pratyaha, you cannot question here. So you will understand that way, okay, because Upanishadic usage. So Anejat means Anejamanaha. So Anejamanaha, Atma e, as a, without Upadi, Atma is, if you see, the Atma is of the nature of motionlessness. And that Nirupadika Drishtya alone, if you say, if you see the same Atma, as Nirupadika Atma, Atma again is what? Ekam. I don't say Atma Ekaha, we should say, but because Ekam, the word is used neuter gender word, so we can say what now? The consciousness principle, the Atma Tattvam, Brahma Tattvam, we can say is what now? Ekam. It is one. When you say one, there is no reality other than Atma. Atma is the only reality. Atma, only reality means there is no second thing other than the Atma. There is no second reality other than the Atma. That is why Advitiyaha and Advayaha, which also I told you already, is again only for you to assimilate. So, Ekam. So, Nirupadika Drishtya, when you see Atma without the Upadis, cognitively removing the Upadis, if you see Atma, Atma is Anejamana, Anejat, not so what? Anejamanaha, Ekaha. Okay? But the same Atma, if you see from the standpoint of, you know, as a Sopadikaha Atma, Atma with Upadis. If you see Atma with Upadis, you can say what? Atma moves fast. Atma moves fast. Atma moves fast means the fastest moving thing is only Atma. There's nothing which can move faster than the Atma. Why? There's nothing which can move faster than the Atma. Here the question might come. First you say Atma is Anejamanaha. No? Atma Tattvam is Anejat. You said that. Now you say Atma moves faster. Atma is the fastest. Which, how can moving fast and motionlessness, isn't it? Fastest movement and motionless, non-moving, motionlessness are two opposite dharmas, two opposite attributes. So, ekasmin vastuni, now the two dharma attributes opposed to each other cannot coexist in the same locus. Ekasmin vastuni viruddha dharmau na bhaveta. They may not be there, isn't it? How can darkness and light can coexist? How can ignorance and knowledge can coexist? How can dwarfness and then tallness coexist? Isn't it? Cannot coexist. Tall, short man came, you can never say. Short, fat man, a tall, fat man, tall, thin man, short, thin man, you can say. But short, tall man came, you can never say. Because two dharma attributes opposed to each other cannot coexist in one locus, isn't it? So Atma cannot have what now? We cannot say Atma Tattvam is of the nature of motionlessness and Atma is the fastest. He cannot say. How is it possible? That is why Upanishad says, no, Sopadika Drishtya. Nirupadika Drishtya, Atma is of the nature of actionlessness, motionlessness, changelessness, silence, but Sopadika Drishtya, all those actions, all those movements, all those motions, all that is happening is what? Only because of Atma. isn't it? So, sopa, if you see the Atma with the Upadhi, you can say what now? Atma is the fastest also. And here, really, is the Atma done really fast, moves fast? Again, another question comes. Really, Atma, it does not really move fast. You know, how is it said here? The mind. Mind is the fastest mover. If at all you say, what is it which moves fast? Mind is the fastest. If mind is the most, you know, fast moving thing, then how does the, why? Because sitting here, Shankaracharya mentioned his Bhashyam, sitting within a room just by sankalpa, by mere thinking, you can go to any part of the world. Not he says Brahmaloka. You cannot go beyond it, okay? Brahmalokam vahapi, if you do not know how Brahmalokam looks. If you have your own idea also, what now? You can go to even Brahmaloka and come back, isn't it? Without moving an inch from where you are sitting. That is why mind is the fastest. Nothing can beat mind going ahead, isn't it? But he says, Atma is faster than the mind. Manasaha javiyaha. This also I told, faster than the mind also implies what? We'll see every word here. So I said, javaha means speed. You know, javaha is speed. So, in one of the verses on Hanumanji, it is said, you know, Manojavaha. Hanumanji is called Manojavaha because he is son of Vayu. Vayu is fast moving, okay? Vayu is also what now? Vayu moves very swiftly, very quickly. And son of the father, you know, the son of Vayu, Vayuputraha, Hanumanji, also, what is his speed, you know? How fast he can move? How swiftly he can move? He can move as fast as the mind. Is it? You know, that's a Manojavaha. One whose speed is of the speed of the mind. That's a Manojavaha. Anyway, that's a different thing. But here, Manasaha Javiyaha. So, Javaha is speed. Again, you say Javaha Javiyaha. No, we can say what? No, Javishtaha. Because if you take it as a neutral gender word, I'm sorry to tell you all these things, okay? I had to tell you. Because neutral gender word is used here. So, javaha, javiyas, then javishta. We take, javiyas is become what now? Javiyo. Javiyaha, then javiyo. So, manasaha javiyaha, atmatattvam is faster than the mind. Here, see, where mind goes anywhere fast and the Atma does not go before the mind, Atma does not need to go before the mind. Why? Atma need not go at all. Atma is all pervasive. Shankaracharya says in his commentary, Sarva Vyapakatvat. Sarvam apnoti iti atma, sarva vyapakatvat. Sarva vyapakatvat means what now? Due to its all pervasiveness, already atma, the very word atma implies what? The reality obtaining as the innermost essence of everything that is here is what? Implied by the term atma due to its all pervasiveness. The very word Atma implies what? The reality is nature of all pervasiveness only. So all pervasive means there is no place, where no object, whichever object the mind reaches to illumine, whichever, you know, place the mind reaches to know, and everywhere Atma is already there. Not by action, but its very nature, it is already there. which means all pervasiveness is the nature of the Atma. So first we said, no, motionlessness, then oneness, then secondlessness, then non-dual nature. Now is what all pervasiveness of the nature of nature, pervasiveness being the nature of the Atma also is revealed here indirectly, isn't it? Or sarva vyapakatvam, all pervasive. And here again the question comes, what does the mind do? You know, mind goes, mind, no, the mind means, mind goes means the thoughts arising from the mind travel. They go out. We have to understand, never does any object, okay, go inside. You know that? All the thoughts go out. Thoughts go out. And thoughts travel through what? Through your five sense organs. And each thought traveling through your sense organ is also called what? Vrittihi. So, netra vrittihi, shrotra vrittihi, nasa vrittihi, no, jihva vrittihi, rasana vrittihi. Different vrittis travel through different sense powers, sense organs. Vrittis go out means, what happen? These vrittis go and pervade the objects. It's called vritti vyaptihi. Pervasion of the vritti, every thought pervades the object. Okay, thought pervades the object, it's very subtle. Thoughts pervade the objects. Thought pervades the place. Isn't it? Thoughts pervade. Thoughts travel and thoughts pervade the objects. But wherever thoughts, you know, thoughts travel, Atma being all pervasive, there will be manifestation of Atma, the consciousness. Isn't it? It is because of the Atma, all-pervasive Atma, thoughts, first of all, have their existence, enjoy their existence. It is because of the all-pervasive Atma, thoughts become conscious and sentient. It is because of the all-pervasive Atma, Chaitanyam, thoughts, you know, become capable of illumining also. The illumining capacity, pervasive capacity, moving capacity, even the very existence, sentiency, all of them, you know, the enjoyed by the mind in the form of thoughts is what now? Because of the Atma. Is it clear? Therefore, mind's thoughts pervade the objects means, and how thoughts pervade the objects, but thoughts themselves do not illumine the objects. It is the consciousness manifest in the pervading thoughts, isn't it? Illumine the objects. It is like I told you already, which when an object is in darkness, suppose there's no light, means you take the torchlight, isn't it? If you take the battery with you and take the battery near the object, it won't illumine, isn't it? If you take the battery without the battery, the torch light without the battery also, what? There won't be light. Put the batteries inside the torch, then you, isn't it? You use it, then it can illumine. Similarly here, the mind, even the mind, the torch goes without the batteries. What will happen? The torch will be one among the unillumined opaque things only. Similarly here, our mind without, even though mind pervades the objects, without being blessed by the Atma, mind cannot illumine the objects. So Atma also without the mind's what? No? Cannot contribute for illumining the Atma. Okay, illumine the objects. Therefore, it is the Atma which lends existence to the mind, which lends consciousness to the mind, which lends sentience to the thoughts, and also which blesses the mind with the capacity to illumine the objects. Therefore, whichever object, that's why reaching means, reaching, mind reaches the objects to illumine the objects. Mind reaches places to illumine the places. It is the mind has to be there. When anything known, anything recognized, anything cognized, anything experienced means the thoughts are very much there. Is it clear now? Thoughts are there. But here what is that? Atma is already there. Typically like when you travel anywhere, you need not take pack your sunlight also from your place. When you go, you can just go wherever you go. When you land, sunlight is there, sun is there already receiving you. Isn't it? Similarly, Atma is Surya Prakashavat. No, Sarvatra Sarvam Vyapya Tishtati. In a Prakashayati. Sannidhimatena Sarvam Prakashayati. Just by its mere presence, it illumines everything. Therefore, this all pervasiveness of the Atma is said here as what now? Presented here as the all pervasiveness, the Swarupam of the Atma is said to be the, you know, fastest. Atma is said to be the fastest, which means faster than the mind. Okay? One thing. So, Manasaha Javiyaha. And not only that, it says, which means what? One more thing implied is imperceptibility of the Atma. Which means, if Atma is faster than the mind, mind illumines the everything else. The one thing mind cannot illumine is the Atma. Mind is the illuminator of the Jagat, definitely. Mind is no illuminator of the Jagat, okay? The knower of the Jagat, illuminator of the universe, is the mind, definitely. But mind by itself is incapable of illumining the Jagat. Mind needs to borrow its capacity to illumine from the Atma only. So, for mind is direct illuminator of the Jagat. Okay, original illuminator is the Atma only. Without the Atma, there cannot be illuminator. Atma is not the illuminator of the Jagat directly. Atma is not the illuminator of the Jagat. But without the Atma, mind will not be able to illumine the Jagat. Therefore, the illuminator of the Jagat is Atma. How should we say? Atma is not the illuminator. Nirupadika Atma is not the illuminator. But the Sopadika Atma is, the illuminator is the Sopadika Atma. Atma with mind Upadhi is what? Becomes the illuminator of the universe. Is it clear? Mm-hmm. Illuminator means what now? Knower. Atma without the Upadhi, pure consciousness is not the illuminator. The status is not there. But mind is the illuminator of the world. But mind is the knower. Mind is the experiencer. Mind is the knower. But can mind be the knower by itself without the help support of the Atma? No. Mind minus Atma will be like a torch without battery cell. Isn't it? Therefore, we say here, the illuminator is the Atma. The ultimate original illuminator is the Atma. Listen now, even though relative illuminator is mind. Relative knower is mind, absolute knower is Atma. Nirupadika Atma is the what now? Not the knower. But there is no knower, illuminator, experiencer, thinker, feeler other than the Atma. Knower, cognizer, experiencer, thinker, feeler is the Atma, the mind. But mind without Atma is what? Will not even be existent. Where is the question of enjoying the status of being the knower, thinker, feeler, etc.? Therefore, the knower, thinker, feeler, everything is Atma. But Atma is not the knower, thinker, feeler, experiencer, cognizer. Is it clear? It's all small things you have to remember very carefully. Therefore, manasaha javiyaha. Therefore, Atma never becomes the illumined. Next step. Never becomes the known. Never becomes an object of thought. Object of knowledge. That's what... No? Atma is ever imperceptible. Ever becomes an object of knowledge. Ever the... experiencer, knower, never becomes the object of knowledge. So, Atma, the non-objectifiability, Atma being non-objectifiable, Atma being imperceptible, is also, that nature is revealed here, one thing. The next is, Na yenath devaha apnuvan. Yenath again, means enath means this self, atma tattvam. Enath is a pronoun, this. Enath means this, and this is implied by what now? This implies the atma tattvam. So devaha na apnuvan, as I told you already, devaha in this verse means sense organs. Na apnuvan. Apnuvan is a past tense verb. Sense organs, devas never reached the Atma. Devaha never reached the Atma. Never arrived at the Atma. It's a past tense sentence. Devaha never arrived at the Atma. Never reached the Atma. Never could catch the Atma. Means what? No, devaha means sense organs. Means sense organs also can never perceive the Atma. Atma is not available for sense perception, being not an object of knowledge. And here we say, what about the sense organs? I already explained to you why sense organs are called devaha. Dyotanatmakaha, says Shankara in his commentary. Because they are of the capacity to illumine the sense objects. These sense organs are dependent on the conscious mind for their existence first. Even to have the status of being existent, sense powers are dependent on the conscious mind. And not only that, for them then to become conscious and sentient also, they depend on the conscious mind. And to become capable of illumining the external objects also, they depend on the conscious mind. So these sense organs, which are sense powers, the seeing power, hearing power, all these five different sense powers, you know, also powers of organs of actions. We can say Atma is neither an object of action, cannot be attained by doing some karma, nor can they be perceived. Neither object of action, nor is it an object of knowledge. It is not an object at all. An object of knowledge can be an object reached through action. An object of knowledge can be, you know, perceived through senses. But here Atma is not an object at all, isn't it? That is what is, again, the imperceptibility is repeated here. So, devaha na apnuvan yenath, yenam atmanam indriyani na apnuvanti. The sense organs do not reach the Atma at all. Means, the sense organs, even to have the status of being existent, they are dependent on the conscious mind. for them to become conscious and sentient, they depend on the conscious mind. And to be capable of functioning as sense organs, they dependent on the mind. Why? Because the mind does not back up the senses. The sense powers are as good as non-existent. They'll be incapable of functioning as sense powers. What is the proof? Every day when you fall asleep, in the night or in the daytime, don't wake up. Daytime or night, when you fall asleep, falling asleep means what? Mind becoming totally passive. When the mind becomes totally passive, the thoughts are resolved, sense organs are not backed by the thoughts. The vrittis, okay, the netra vritti, shrotra vritti, all the vrittis are withdrawn. In sleep, what happens? The vrittis are resolved. The vrittis going through different sense organs are withdrawn and they are resolved. When the vrittis do not back up, the sense powers, what happens? Sense powers also remain resolved. When the vritti is resolved, sense powers alone can function independently. Means in sleep also, mind will be sleeping, still we can be watching television, we can be doing a lot of things. Understand? Why? Because sense powers can never function independently without the mind's function. Without the functioning of the mind. Understand? That is why there is no such a thing called perception of the external world in sleep, because sense powers are as good as non-existent in sleep. Why? They are resolved. Why they resolve? Resolve means what? They are non-functional. Sense powers are non-functional. Why non-functional? Incapable of functioning. Because they are resolved. Because they are not backed by the thoughts. Why? Thoughts are resolved. Why thoughts are resolved? Because mind is non-functional. Mind is present in sleep but non-functional. Mind is non-functional means thoughts do not rise, thoughts are resolved. Thoughts are resolved means my sense organs are not backed up by the thoughts. Therefore, sense organs do not function. Not only sense organs, with what? Karma indriyani, also jnana indriyani. All the five sense powers, all the five powers of organs of actions, in sleep, they are non-functional. That is why in sleep, you all lie down like a dead body. Body is like a dead body. There's neither knowledge. Okay, there's no perception, there's no actions, there's no movement. Physical movement also is not there, because physical movement means all the powers of organs of actions are resolved. Hands are there, legs are there, organ of speech is there. All the physical parts are there, they're alive, they're not dead, but still powers are non-functional. Sleep means what? All the powers become non-functional. And no perception of the world. Why? All the sense powers are resolved. You don't speak in sleep. You blabber something, that is different thing. Okay, some problem. There is some psychological problem. That is the problem. But actually, you don't speak. Okay, there's no speech. There's no walking. Walking against somnambulism is different. That is a disease. I'm talking about. Okay, yes. If you are okay, otherwise there's no physical movement, physical activity. Why? Because karma indriyani are non-functional. Present but non-functional. Jnana indriyani are present but non-functional. Present means what? Non-functional, resolved. Why? Because vrittis do not back them. Vrittis are resolved. Vrittis are resolved. Why? Because mind is non-functional. Okay? Therefore, no perception, no activity. Suppose the mind leaves the body and go away. Okay, mind departed, mind is present non-functional, means sleep. Mind left the body means mind will be non-functioning mind, okay, but still alive without the body. That mind, along with the mind, sense powers, powers of organs of actions, pranas, all of them together depart. It's called departure of the sukshma shariram, is called death of the body. Then the office is an unoccupied office, physical body has to be sent for what now? Recycling. put it outside on the roadside. Recycling. Really? Exactly what office is for. Office, the room demolished for recycling, no, rebuilt. So what is the point we to understand? The ten powers, when the mind is non-functional, only one thing that is functioning is pranas. Understand? Pranas function. When the mind leaves the body, pranas also stop functioning. That is when the mind leaves. Is it clear? Therefore, all the ten are non-functional. Therefore, what he says is, here, the figuratively, Upanishad presents the fact that sense organs did not reach the Atma. Means, the sense organs, this all these powers, same ten powers which are dependent on the mind for their functioning, for the capacity to illumine, capacity to activate the body, isn't it? They are, when they depend on the mind for their functioning and existence, whereas when the mind itself is what? Mind itself cannot reach the Atma, means cannot illumine the Atma. Mind itself cannot illumine the Atma, reach the Atma, means where is the question of sense organs, organs of action reaching the Atma? Therefore, na apnuvan. Is it clear? So, apnuvan, na apnuvan. Then, poor, therefore, the Atma is available for sense perception. And not only that, Atma is not available for arriving at through an action, as a fruit of an action also. Is it clear? Na apnuvanne. Then purvam arshat. Therefore, purvam arshat means, so purvam arshat means the word purvam, before the mind. And as I said, Upanishad presents here, all the mind, sense organs, Atma, all are running. And Atma is always going ahead of the mind and sense organs. The mind itself cannot reach the Atma. And the sense organs which are running behind the mind, where is the question of reaching the Atma? They cannot even run along with the Atma. There's no question of going ahead of the Atma. Is it? So, purvam arshat means always it was going ahead. So, the arshat actually, purvam means before, much ahead of the mind and sense organs. What is implied is, Atma is never an object, non-objectifiable, imperceptible, not available for thought perception or sense perception. It's not an object at all. So, that means you need not work hard searching for the Atma as an object of experience or as an object. That's an teaching. Don't search for the Atma as an object. Don't see in anything which is experienced. Any experience you have, not the Atma. That's what implied. Yesterday also I had to say something like this. Then arshatu. This is a verb. It should be arshatu. Why arshatu? The verb is, actual verb is, the present tense verb, the lat form of this verb is rishati. It is derived from the root rish. Rishati means janati, one meaning, from which you derive the word noun rishihi. Another meaning is to go. Rish, to go. Rishati means gachati. Rishati janati, rishati gachati also. To go. So rishati means goes. Arshat, it must be arshat. But in Chandasa Prayoga, in Vedic usage, they have used it as arshat. It's a long form. Arshat means reached. Purvam arshat. It reached before, always Atma reached before the mind and the sense organs. Wherever the mind and sense organs go to illumine, to know, to reach, and before the mind and sense organs, Purvam Atma reached. Atma reached means what? Atma always reaches before the mind and sense organs. Which means Atma need not run really like this mind and sense organs. There is no traveling. Travel is not at all required. Just by its nature of being all pervasive, it is much ahead of mind and sense organs. So all pervasive, non-traveling, non-arriving, non-departing, non-moving, Atma can never become the object of moving, departing, coming, going, mind and sense organs. Resolving, rising, thoughts and sense organs. Is it clear? Because the thoughts rise and resolve in Atma, the consciousness. Sense powers rise and resolve in sense powers. Function and become, remain non-functional in sense organs. In Atma. Okay? The sense powers, powers of organs of actions, mind, the thoughts, they all rise, function and resolve. In the Atma. The Atma, isn't it? Therefore, Atma is never, never reachable. Never attainable. That is why Jagat is, that is why Atma is never available for objectification, perception or knowledge. As an object. Atma is available for recognition as the very subject, once the swarupam. So, apnavanya puram arshate, you got it. It must be arshat. Then, tad dhavataha anyan atyeti tishtate. Tishtate, atma tattvam, tishtat means tishtan, atma tishtan, remaining in one place. Remaining without any movement. Remaining. Tishtan. Means what? Remaining the same always. Without any movement. Tishtan. So he should take this what? Tishtate. Atmatattvam tishtate. Atyeti. Dhavataha anyan atyeti. Now, dhavataha anyan is objective. All those thoughts, the minds, the sense organs, which are all running to reach, catch, But here, all of them have to travel to illumine, to arrive at. Whereas Atma, without traveling, it overtakes all of them. Atyeti means what? Overtakes. How is it possible? In running race, if I run, few more people are running with me in their own different tracks. I stand here itself without even moving. And others are running. And remaining not moving an inch from where I stand, still at last I get the first prize. How come? I just run. Isn't it? How do I expect? So, tishtan anyan dhavataha anyan atyeti. Nindruhunde asayamal nindruhunde odahindra matrakalai kadandu selhirar. Now, one who overtakes all of them who are running without even moving. How is it is possible? Only if it is all pervasive. Isn't it? It's a nice way of putting the all pervasiveness. It's all figurative presentation of Atma being all pervasive. Okay. Tishtat, tishtan. Then, next, last one. Tasmin. Why I had to repeat all these things? You see, Sandra, in the class, again, I feel inspired to say it. It's more Sanskrit, that's why. Tasmin apaha matarishwa dadhati. Tea break time, huh?